Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Last night, Ohio State University officials turned rumors into fact when they announced that former Florida Gators head coach Urban Meyer would be the next head football coach for the OSU Buckeyes.
It's a great opportunity to come back to my home state, where I was born, where I grew up, where I went to school, met my wife.
That's Urban Meyer. But the question is, how could he give up all that sunshine and adulation for a program burdened with NCAA sanctions and crummy weather? Joining us now to talk about Urban Meyer's career in the Sunshine State is Pat Dooley. He's a sports reporter for the Gainesville Sun and dubbed the Urban Historian by another reporter at the Orlando Sentinel. Welcome to the show, Pat Dooley.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Urban Meyer has said that he left Florida for health reasons. Let's listen to what he said about that last night.
My health is in good shape. I've been checked out over and over again. I feel fantastic, and I'm ready to go.
So, Pat Dooley, in your column yesterday, you said that more than anything, Florida fans want to know why Meyer wasn't healthy enough to stay at Florida, but is healthy enough now to take over a scandal-ridden program.
Well, and I think that's the reason there are, and it's not all Gator fans, but there is, I would say it's a majority.
Mm-hmm.
It may be a 60-40 split of Gator fans that are upset with this. And, you know, it's like I said in the column, get over it. I mean, the guy, this was a dream job for him. And but I will say this, and I know probably Urban better than anybody, he hasn't lost a game in a year. You know, he hasn't had to work that grind in a year, and his health is fine right now. And that's why I think that contributes to why it's fine. The question we all have, and look, I consider Urban a friend. He's done unbelievable stuff for me for my golf tournament that I have down here to stop children's cancer. He's been a great friend of my father. And, you know, I consider him a friend. And I worry a little bit about that, you know, the health problem. It does it creep up when he starts working his butt off again? Now, I know he said in the press conference last night that he's basically going to back off as far as that goes. And we'll see if he can. You know, we'll see if he loses game four to Wisconsin, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
If he's not back in there at 6 a.m. and grinding away. So, look, it's got to be a concern, but at the same time, he feels like it's not.
My guest is Pat Dooley. He's a sports columnist for the Gainesville Sun. If you have a question or comment, Pat will be with us for about another 10 minutes, so get your question or comments in right away, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Right, I mean, was it ever clear that his health concerns or health issues last year when he resigned were stress-related and related to the job?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any question about that, that his body didn't react real well to stress. I think it was a bigger issue the first time. Obviously, everybody's heard the 911 call after the Alabama game when he's basically out. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's knocked out, and he has to go to the hospital, and that was certainly scary. You know, he basically came back, you know, for a lot of reasons, but one of them was he kind of looked around and saw all these people that were going to lose their jobs when he walked out the door, and so that was part of it. And he wanted to give it a try, and he did scale back. He delegated a lot more authority. He traveled. He went to Italy to see the Vatican. He went to and he walked the route that Jesus Christ walked. You know, he did all these great things and felt a lot more refreshed coming into the season. But the season turned out to be a mess. And I think that contributed to the stress as well.
You wrote, the Gator Nation feels betrayed as if it happened all over again. You think you have a special relationship with a guy. He walks away and tells you marriage isn't for him and then ends up marrying someone else. Actually, you said someone less attractive, but we'll get to that later. Do you really think he was out of it for good at his age without any clear indication of what his, I mean, with, you know, his health problems being what they were? Did you think that was it?
I really believed it was. I told people, and when they would ask me, I think he's done coaching. But that in 4 or 5 years, I could see him maybe getting back into it if something opened up. And let's face it, and this is something Urban and I talked about last Monday. Who could have seen this happen at Ohio State? You know, in terms of the whole Jim Tressel issue. Nobody saw that. I mean, when he resigned, it was November or December of last year. This all Tressel thing didn't resign until or get fired or whatever you want to say until what was it, May, I believe.
Yeah, late spring, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, and he told me, look, there's only two jobs he would even think about, and that's that one in Notre Dame. He's got a special place in his heart for Notre Dame where he coached as well. And obviously Notre Dame's not opening up anytime soon. So when this opened up, I think he saw it as, hey, this was probably the one chance I'm going to get to go back home and coach a school that I grew up being a fan of and wore Buckeye jerseys and had a Buckeye in his pocket when he coached against the Buckeyes in the national championship game. And I feel good, and I've spent some time with my family, and I think I can manage that. And so that's why he said, I'm going to go ahead and pull the trigger on this.
Actually, I think I was coming back from Memorial Day weekend when I got the call that that it was all over. All right, so now for that attractive part. Ohio State certainly has its problems these days, but Urban Meyer sounds like the kind of guy who likes a challenge, no?
No, I think he does. The only reason I said that is because, let's face it, they're going to have some sanctions. Now, Ohio State fans attacked me after that. I wrote that and said that those sanctions are going to be minor. Maybe they've been on the NCAA committee, and I'm unaware of it. I don't know. I don't know how bad they're going to be. There's going to be something, though.
So far, it hasn't been so great.
Yeah.
There's more to come.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, something's going to happen. Now, people take the fact that they're going to play in a bowl game as they're not going to get a bowl ban, and that may be true. I don't know. I'm not privy to all the information. But there are going to be some sanctions, and that's why it is slightly less attractive than the Florida job, and the athletes, let's face it, are better in the South right now. Yes, that's why the SEC is ruling right now and about to win its sixth straight national championship. But at the same time, is it easier to win in the Big Ten? Probably slightly, maybe 10% easier. After watching this Florida team down here go through what they had to go through with their schedule, mm-hmm. I mean, there's nobody's going unbeaten through that schedule.
My guest is Pat Dooley. He's a sports columnist for the Gainesville Sun. We're talking about Urban Meyer. Pat Dooley, how long did you cover him?
Well, I was from the day he walked in the door to the day he walked out.
If you have a question or comment for Pat Dooley, give us a call, 614-292-8513. He talked about recruiting. He was going to get on the horn last night right away and start making some recruiting calls. But he's had his own problems with recruiting players that embarrassed the Gators program. There was a lot of people defending, for example, Jim Tressel last year when this happened, or when there have been problems before, like, hey, he does the best he can. He can't control them 24/7. Was Urban Meyer's given any kind of responsibility, or was the onus at all on him when there have been problems with the players in the past?
Yeah, I think a lot of it came down on him. And look, the bottom line is the higher level you recruit on, the more likely you're going to have some issues, because you're sometimes getting kids who are maybe from some tough backgrounds. And this certainly happened here. I mean, there were players who got in trouble. There was a ton of arrests. There was 30-something arrests. Some of it is, last night he said that it was exaggerated, and he's absolutely right. One kid got arrested for throwing a bag of potato chips at a clerk. Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest with you, UPD down here, the University Police Department, it's a little bit, they relish arresting athletes, where in some places, and I'm not saying that's that way at Ohio State, some places, though, we all know, they'll look the other way. But down here, it's not that way, and they're tough on the athletes. Now, there was also a guy who pulled a gun out of his trunk and shot it in the air. I mean, that's pretty bad. There was Carlos Dunlap, who missed the SEC championship game because he was asleep in his car and the engine was running at a stoplight, and he was hammered. So there was just – there have been some bad deals here, some bad situations, but he has been held somewhat accountable, I think, by the media and by fans, because there were so many arrests. He's right, though, that it was exaggerated to a point. One kid got arrested 3 times for having a suspended driver's license. I don't know that that's the end of the world.
We have an email from Abe, writes, so Ohio State has shunned the local kid, Luke Fickle, who stepped in to coach a spiraling team in favor of a coaching mercenary with baggage. It's unfortunate but not surprising. Ohio State is all about money anymore. Tuition keeps going up while fewer students are admitted, even though the university is supported by the taxpayers. Ads are for sale on every surface at OSU, which has $2 billion in the bank while the state budget collapses. So somebody decided that Urban Meyer will win more games than Fickle and that he's worth the money, but the state's social safety net isn't. It's no surprise, and it isn't going to change until voters and alumni work together to change it. There is a lot of chit-chat on going around town about $4 million a year for Urban Meyer, but nationwide, that it isn't that big of a deal when you follow college sports, the big-time college sports.
Well, and certainly down here, I mean, Saban's making a lot more than that. Les Miles is making a lot more than that. Will Muschamp, who'd never been a head coach in his life, is making $2.7 million at Florida. It is about money, and I got news for you. It's not going to get better. It's only going to get worse. Have you paid attention to any of the realignment stuff that's going on? Mm-hmm. That's all about money. The SEC is in a situation where they signed this huge TV deal, and guess what? The Pac-10 goes by it. The Big 12 goes by it, and they get bigger deals. They want more money, so the only way they can do it is bring two more teams in. So that's what they've done here. It's all about money. It's a big business, and certainly the market value for Urban Meyer, $4 million, is just about right. That's what he was making at Florida, and he made that because he won the two national championships. So, no, I don't think anybody should be worried too much about what he's making. And the bottom line is, Luke Fickell went 6-6, and I have great respect for what he had to deal with, and it was impossible, and it was difficult. And I admire the way they played against Michigan the other day, but he went 6-6, and it's still all about winning and losing. And if he'd gone 11-1, maybe he'd still be the coach.
Derek in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Derek.
Yes. Hi. How you doing, Pat? First thing, Urban Meyer was an excellent hire. How you doing? But my problem is, will he stay the whole 6 years? I mean, Ohio State's really dreaming. They're going to get a two-year bowl ban. You know, that's probably what's going to end up happening. Say he's into his fourth year, and they're maybe 10-2, and he's getting fatigued. And also with his girls, where he signed that contract to go to their volleyball games, do you believe that he'll even make the 6 years at Ohio State? Because they're going to fire Gene Smith, the athletic director. They've got a lot of problems. Do you even believe that this will be more stressful?
No, that's the season we just now went through.
I don't think it's more stressful, because I think he'll have a little bit of time because of the sanctions that are going to come down. Florida is a very, very stressful job. There's an amazing amount of media down here covering this team on a daily basis. They're a national brand, and Ohio State is too, but in the SEC it's different, and there's no way to explain it to anybody who doesn't live down here. It's just different. And everywhere you go, every stadium you go to, there's 80,000 people who want to kill you. And so it is a very stressful job. Will he make the 6 years? That's a question nobody can answer. I can't answer it. He can't answer it. Gene Smith can't answer it, and Ohio State fans can't answer it. Nobody knows how that's going to work out, because we don't know where he is health-wise and how the stress of being a head coach again is going to affect him. We just don't know the answer to that.
Thanks, Derek, for that call. Pat Dooley, in your column, you mentioned the dichotomy of Urban Meyer, that he had a way of bringing fans together, but he always kept them ultimately at arm's length.
Right.
What's he like to cover? What kind of guy is he? And can I get him on public media?
Well, I tell you, my relationship with Urban has been fantastic. Pick up the phone, he answers it most of the time. Text him, he responds. He answers questions. The rest of the media down here, I don't think, is as enthralled with him, because he never really he's not one of these, slappy on the back kind of guys. He's the kind of guy who's kind of a little bit closed off. And I think with the fans, you know, he closed practices, you know, and there was never – and a part of it is not his fault. The University Athletic Association, which we call the firm down here, they restricted a lot of what he could do as far as going out and speaking to the Gator clubs and as far as doing some other things. So it wasn't all his fault, but there was always a feeling of disconnect with the fans. I think maybe because he was an Ohio guy. He wasn't a Southern guy. And you got to remember, everything's compared to Steve Spurrier, who was a Florida graduate.
Mm-hmm. Well, Pat Dooley, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate your insights.
Hey, anytime.
Pat Dooley, sports columnist for the Gainesville Sun. When we return, we'll be talking about the dropout rates and how we can make them go away. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
89.7 FM is your source for NPR news and local news. Stay up to date with issues impacting life in Central Ohio. The award-winning WOSU News team keeps you connected to the community, and the Statehouse News Bureau has the latest in-depth coverage of state government. Listen to news from across the country and from our own backyard on 89.7 NPR News and streaming online at WOSU.org.
This is 89.7 NPR News, and on Friday, December 9th at 5 p.m., WOSU Public Media will no longer broadcast on 8:20 a.m. To hear national news from NPR and local news from our award-winning news team, tune to 89.7 FM. On 89.7 NPR News, you can hear your favorite shows like Morning Edition and All Sides with Ann Fisher. You can also stream 89.7 on your computer or mobile device. Just visit WOSU.org. And be sure to set your radio dial to 89.7 FM after Friday, December 9th. Rain in the forecast off and on today, and temperatures falling this afternoon. Expect some rain mixing with snow tonight, becoming all snow after midnight, a low of 33 degrees. There's a chance of snow for Wednesday, cloudy skies, and a high near 40. And clear skies for Wednesday night, a low of 27. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Maybe you think the dropout problem, the high school dropout problem, doesn't affect you. Maybe you should think again. According to the U.S. Department of Justice, some three-quarters of state prison inmates are dropouts, as are nearly 60% of federal inmates. In fact, dropouts are 3.5 times more likely than high school graduates to be incarcerated in their lifetime. Why should that matter to you? Increasing the high school completion rate by just 1% for all men ages 20 to 60 would save the United States $1.4 billion annually in reduced costs associated with crime. That's according to one prominent researcher. Programs across the country are working to reduce the dropout rate with varying degrees of success. Joining us now to talk about that and some local examples is Nancy Nestor Baker. She's an OSU administrator who works on education issues. She's right now on loan to United Way of Central Ohio to work on education mobilization partnerships to boost graduation rates in our community. Welcome to the show, Nancy.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Also with us is Maureen Casamassimo from AT&T Success Center at Lyndon McKinley High School. Welcome to the show, Maureen.
Thank you.
Our discussion on preventing school dropout is part of American Graduate. Let's Make It Happen, a public media initiative supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. WOSU TV3 will air a forum on the topic of on this topic on Friday, December 2nd at 9 p.m. It repeats at the same time on the same channel on Friday, December 16th, 23rd, and the 30th. If you have any more questions about that, want more information, go to WOSU.org/allsides, and we'll have links there for you. So, Nancy Nestor Baker, have the reasons for dropping out changed over the years? Because over the long haul, when you look at the big, long-term numbers, they really the numbers really haven't changed that much.
That's correct. And I think you still see the same kind of issues that lead young people to drop out of school. The problem is we can't just say there is this one issue and this is what we must all attack and this is where we need to go. The reasons are varied. They're personal, they're social, they're academic. It depends a great deal on the student and on the school setting. So we've seen dropouts all along. We've all been familiar with that issue, but it has become an increasingly pressing economic issue for all of us.
Right, and there's actually been a uptick in there's been an increase just since 2008. And I was wondering, is that just a correlation or is it really part of the economic downturn?
I think you do see the economic downturn. I also think you see a number of cultural issues that are contributing to that, particularly when you look at where the dropout rates are the highest in our country. And the urban areas, the big city districts, the metropolitan areas, the pressures that are there, whether those are cultural or economic, are definitely increasing the dropout issue.
There's just some statistics that caught my eye, and they've been true for almost forever, but nearly one half of all African Americans, Hispanics, and Native Americans in public schools will not graduate with their class. High school students from low-income families drop out at six times the rate of students from high-income families. Students with disabilities, especially learning disabilities and behavior and emotional disabilities, drop out at twice the rate of other students. Foreign-born students had a dropout rate of 21% in 2009, compared with 13% for children born in the United States. It made me wonder, is there something about the system of education in the United States that alienates marginalized people?
I think what we need to really work on is making that educational system more responsive to what young people actually need and the way they perceive things. Too often we tend to perceive the education system from our adult perspective instead of looking at it from the young people's perspective on what actually keeps them engaged in school, how we deliver instruction, the way we structure the day, the way we structure assessment. Those pieces need to be looked at not just from an accountability perspective, but also from a human development perspective.
I'm talking with Nancy Nestor Baker. She's an OSU administrator. She's on loan to the United Way of Central Ohio, where she's working on education mobilization partnerships to boost graduation rates in our community. If you have a question or comment for her or my other guest, Maureen Casamassimo from the AT&T Success Center at Linda McKinley High School, you can give us a call at 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page, post your question or comment there. I've heard just very recently from a scholar on the Montessori style of education describe our traditional educational system like a factory, and that it's not about the individual, it's about efficiencies. And when you look at these kind of statistics, you have to wonder, really, how efficient is it anymore to do it this way?
We've had a factory model of education for a very long time. What we have tried to do, and not always successfully, is to balance the needs of the individual with the needs of the system and the efficiencies that are required to run a system well. That has created problems for us. You know, when we look at larger class sizes, when we look at very large buildings, when we look at moving students from one slot in the egg carton to the next slot in the egg carton, it's too easy to lose track of students who have very specific individual needs. We have to find a way to maintain efficiency at the same time that we're able to really look at young people. And that saves us a great deal of money, effort, angst over years that we need to look at as a savings.
Another kind of efficiency.
Yes.
I was talking with a foreign exchange student from India. She said there's 15,000 students in her high school. She loves being here. But we think a class with between 35 and 50 students is gigantic.
We do. When we look at our education system, and you see a lot of these changes taking root now, when we talk about the Common Core of academics, when we talk about how to look at teachers and their work life and their workloads, all of those components need to come together and shape around meeting the needs of individual students. It's difficult to focus on individual development, cognitive, emotional, academic development at the same time that you're focusing on another group of 29 students that will be following right behind. So how do we help teachers? How do we provide the kind of services? What kind of counseling and community supports can we put into place that will turn our system into the kind of system that we need now?
614-292-8513, that's the number to call if you'd like to join the conversation. We're talking about the issue of high school dropouts. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. Maureen Casamassimo from AT&T Success Center at the Linda McKinley High School. Your program focuses on serving high-risk ninth graders with specialized mentoring, intensive counseling services. How do you decide that somebody is high-risk?
Okay, well, what we do is we look at the records of our incoming ninth graders and see what were their challenges from the eighth grade. So the students we select have already exhibited failure in numerous classes.
Like just grades, or is there more to it?
There's more to it. Mm-hmm. There's failure, there's attendance rates, there is concerns with some of the things that they're coming in from lack of environmental and familial support. And so we look at those records, and then we do screening process to select them for participation in the program.
As far as the family and the background and that sort of thing, I heard something interesting on NPR this morning that people tend to go to college where their parents went to college. They had the same, they're on the same route. And if their parents didn't go to college, they tend not to. And all of those things are very understandable. But is what are you looking at when you look at the family background, whether the parents have been incarcerated, whether there's they've been having problems with family social services and that sort of thing?
Well, we have a parental engagement part of the program. I'll tell you the four stages. The first is the helping the students become academically successful. So we talk to them about the challenges that they have and the skills that they don't have, like study skills and test-taking strategies and how to eliminate some of the drama that gets in the way of being an adolescent in school so that they can function better as a student. The second is a career development piece where they start to match their interests and their talents with careers that they might be willing to pursue or think about pursuing, and in that way they start to make good choices about how they plan out their high school years. And then the third component is mentoring. So as they go through the program and complete it successfully, they become mentors to the next group of students that come in. So it gives them kind of a role of success and an identity that they may not have had before, because we're not looking at students who have had an attachment to a sport or a drama club or any kind of other activity that's been a positive for them. And the fourth part is the parental engagement. So from the time we start to screen the students and look at their participation, we are on the phone talking to parents and letting the parents know that this is something that their students have been invited to attend because we see them as positive candidates. And oftentimes, this is the first kind of connection that a parent has had with a school, with a student who has had numerous difficulties, that is a positive connection.
It's proactive, in other words. It's responding to some negatives, though.
Absolutely. But it's done in a way like we are inviting your student to participate in a program that may help turn his or her academic successes around to more a positive strain. And then at the conclusion with the parental engagement, we've had a couple of dinners where we've had the parents come in with the students to celebrate their successes while being in the Student Success Skills Program.
Jabril, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Jabril.
Thank you, Anne. This is a very interesting topic. My name is Jabril. I'm with Somali Ken. We do an annual graduation event for Somali students and their parents and the whole community, and bring together elected officials. This year, we had Columbus School Superintendent Jean Harris as the keynote speaker. We had Mayor Coleman. We had congratulations from all elected officials in the area. Now, Somalis being new Americans, you just mentioned that 21% of foreign-born students are likely to drop out compared to 13%. So I wanted to emphasize the role of the community in reducing this problem. We received support from the United Way of Central Ohio and the Ohio State University and other groups for this important event. And really, since we started, we have seen an improvement in the dropout rate, especially with boys. A year ago, we had only 30 boys graduate from local high school.
Out of how many?
I mean, of 160 students, only 40 were boys. And this year we had almost 90 students out of 180. So,
thanks, Jabril. Hang on. Nancy Nestor-Baker, what's the deal with boys?
we could do a whole program on that, and
I'm not knocking. It's just that they have these high rates of dropout, these low rates of other things, and yet when comes time to, you know, they still earn more money out in the job market.
Well, it is a problem with boys.
What is it?
Well, you know, if you think about the development, you know, of the brain, if you want. I'm not going to dig into brain research or anything like that. I certainly am not qualified to do that. But when we look at the development of young men and we look at the societal pressures, especially that hit young men at some of those very key developmental times for them, they are buffered from some of it, but battered by much of it, if you will. You know, the cultural responses, the lack of role models are extremely problem creating for our young people, especially our young males. They tend to have fewer positive adult role models, tend to have fewer positive connections within the community. And just as Jabril was talking about, that community role is absolutely pivotal if we're going to keep girls and boys in school and help them graduate. Until we can really bring that whole community focus onto our young people, we're going to see all of those people that we're currently seeing falling by the wayside.
You know, Jabril, I was talking to some a woman from the Rwandan immigrant community that talked about so many of them are women with children. There aren't as many men.
Very true, especially the men between the ages of 30 to 50. Those who would be serving as role models are missing in the immigrant community because of immigration rules and things. So I think it's mainly children and elderly people and women who are present in Central Ohio, which is very unfortunate.
Okay. Thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Take care.
And you also see a high rate of incarceration in the urban centers, so we simply do not have as many men playing the roles that we need them to play.
How do you address that issue in your program, Maureen?
That's a good question. We have the program is implemented by graduate students who are studying to be school counselors. And so we have some males that are in that capacity delivering those services. And we have we attempt to set them up with the young men that are involved in the program as well. Now, the other piece of it, though, is that we are finding it is very important that there are positive male role models for our students that struggle with role models. But we also see that if there is a positive role model, period, gender exclusive, that our students do lots better. And we have a predominant group of males that are associated with our center, and we have had them, even outside of the grant, do boys' book clubs that have been facilitated by female interns. We've had them do boys-to-mentor groups that are facilitated by females. And the overwhelming response, if you ask the students that participate, is that they felt that they had someone in their life who was mentoring them, who was listening to them, who was attending to them, and that the gender and even times the color was not significant to them.
Jerome and Marysville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Enjoying the topic.
Thank you.
I'm curious about one thing. There's an explicit connection that's been made between dropout rates and crime. And I'm wondering what the implicit causal relationship between, if you got all these people to graduate high school, what makes you think that they would stop committing crimes? I mean, right now, people who have degrees can't get jobs, see a very dim future. So it seems to me you're just shifting the problem from one population to another. How does this, you know, I don't see how it's going to increase the opportunities for people simply getting the degrees.
Okay.
When there's so few opportunities out there. What promise do you hold them? And that seems to me part of the problem of telling people that, you know, you're going to have this great future if you graduate. I mean, that's what I did. People kept telling me there was going to be a job for me, there's going to be a job for me. And then what happened was the people who were retiring, their jobs weren't replaced. And there are no jobs there.
Well, what do you thank you, Jerome, for that comment. We appreciate it. What do you tell kids? You know, stay in high school, get a job. Well, yeah, but then you got to go to college now. And then even as Jerome mentioned, even in college, if you get the college degree. So people who are kind of in that hopeless state, how do you keep them up enough to make it through when the promises can be kind of flimsy at this point?
Well, I would say part of the challenge is that you help them address the issues that are getting in the way of them achieving academically.
Their own very personal issues.
Absolutely, absolutely. And even as we do this academic skill building with them, we are very cognizant of the kids who are coming in with a boatload of challenges that prevent them from either getting to school on time, performing well in a class without being disruptive. And so we meet with them individually and provide them with, again, one-on-one additional support to address some of those challenges so that they can be more successful and hopefully stay in school.
And I think I hate for anyone to tell a child, you must stay in school, and if you do, you will have a great job when you get out. We can't make those kind of promises. None of us can or should. But when you think about what our research tells us in this country is that with each educational level you achieve, you at least have a greater chance of accessing opportunities as they come along. And also, if we can keep our young people in school, if we can keep them in an appropriate environment, and of course we've already discussed how sometimes that isn't the case, but if we can have young people that are linked to adults who care about them on a daily basis, we don't send those kids out to fend for themselves at age 17 or 18. We have a better chance as a society of helping young people become productive citizens. And no, we can't promise jobs. We can't say that the weak economy is going to be better tomorrow or next week or next year. But what we can say is that you will have more options available to you, so you will have a better chance, and you yourself will become more successful.
We're talking about high school dropouts and how to turn around the rates that have kicked in again during this economic downturn. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News, and in 20 minutes, Hour 2 of All Sides begins with Tech Tuesday, social media and shopping, Cyber Monday, and cloud devices. Join us for Tech Tuesday from 11 till noon on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Ohio Department of Health. The Ohio Medical Reserve Corps is looking for medical and non-medical volunteers who are ready to help Ohioans when disaster strikes. More details at ohioresponds.gov.
Rain in the forecast for today, cloudy skies and temperatures falling this afternoon. A rain-snow mix is likely tonight, a low of 33 degrees. Expect some snow on Wednesday, gradually becoming sunny and a high near 40. Clear skies Wednesday night, a low of 27 degrees, and sunshine with a high of 46 for Thursday. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We are talking about the high school dropout problem, how to prevent it, with Nancy Nestor Baker and Maureen Casamassimo from the AT&T Success Center at Linda McKinley High School. Actually, Nancy is an OSU administrator on loan to United Way of Central Ohio. Joining us now is Jennifer Voigt. She's vice president of programs for Big Brothers, Big Sisters of Central Ohio. Welcome to the show, Jennifer.
Hi, thank you.
We are talking about our discussion on preventing school dropout is part of American Graduate, Let's Make It Happen, a public media initiative supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And there is a forum that will be broadcast later this week. If you want to learn more about it on WOSU television, go to our website at WOSU.org/allsides. We'll have a link there for you with more information. So Jennifer Voigt, Big Brothers Big Sisters operates school-based mentoring programs in a lot of different school districts, from Big Walnut to Marysville to Whitehall. What's the common denominator with all of those?
Really just looking at where the needs are.
Where the rates are higher.
Right.
Where there's, okay.
And dropout rates and graduation rates, and looking for school partnerships. And our biggest partnership, of course, is with Columbus City Schools and working with them on the dropout prevention.
And do you notice anything? What are the big, are there big differences between the schools and sort of the kids that you're going to find in, say, Marysville schools that are at risk for dropout Do there tend to be different trends with them or different issues than, say, Columbus City Schools?
Yeah, sure. There's definitely different issues in the different communities, but I think at the heart of it, it really is getting to what are some of those common issues that kids are facing, whether it be academics or, as we've talked earlier, the need for role models or mentors or people that they can connect with to help get them on that path and help them picture what that success can look like.
Derek in Silverton, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Derek. Derek in Silverton, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Very well, thanks.
All right. Basically, I was brought up in foster care. I was a young African male. Did not have my father biologically or my mother around. And I was brought up in a low-income neighborhood. They told me I was not going to graduate from high school. I did that. I was a first-class graduate of 2004. Grew up around a lot of black young males that did not have their father. And seeing them then and seeing them now, they did not have those opportunities or those male role models there to motivate or inspire them to move forward. And that's what's going on now in Ohio right now. There's a lot of young black males in Ohio that don't have the schools that give them the programs to either work, you know, have a work-study program or something like that. Hughes High School in Cincinnati, Ohio, has a program where it's zoology, and they have other things as well, and I think they need to implement that more in more high schools across America, not just in Ohio.
So have programs that not only interest but actually can channel people into real job,
exactly,
real careers.
Yes, because when I was growing up, there was the grandparents, the great-grandparents, and now those people have passed on. They don't have those, you know, solid foundations, you know, in the family anymore. So,
Nancy?
You bring up a couple of really good points. The community tie and how important that is and the importance of having those role models, those adult connections for young people so that they can see what a future can look like for them and how good a future can actually be. And also the need in schools to make sure that as we develop ever more rigorous curriculum that we do so with the idea that we're preparing young people for their future and for jobs that they themselves will need to choose. So how do we deliver our Common Core? How do we deliver our higher standards-based education in a way that is relevant to young people and that does allow for some opportunities to connect them to the real world that they're going to be part of?
See, Derek, let me ask you, were you considered at risk for dropout?
Oh, it's very high risk.
So what was the magic for you? What kept you there, not only graduating, but graduating, you know, with honors?
Honestly, as they say, it takes a village to raise a child. Mm-hmm. I was that child, and I was raised in a village. And I had a lot of people neighbors, friends and family, my church, that were pushing for me to graduate, you know. And it was very difficult because I was angry that I didn't have my father around, and I didn't, you know, have that background like I wanted to, but I just had the right people at the right time to continue to push me every day and every night to do the homework, to come to class. Even when I was skipping class and skipping school, I still stayed in and I still pushed forward. And I think one of the main things that a lot of my peers, when we were in high school, we didn't have that future to say, oh, we're going to have this job once we come out of high school and go into college, you know, and a lot of people just gave up.
What'd you end up doing?
I ended up graduating from high school.
Not that you're at your end of your life or anything. You sound But what are you doing now?
Well, I ended up going to Job Corps, Dayton, Ohio Job Corps, for a pharmacy technician. And currently working at a children's hospital. So.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your call and congratulations.
Thank you very much. You have a blessed day.
You too. 614-292-8513. If you want to give us a call, you can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. Let's talk about Project Mentor. That's a collaborative effort of Big Brothers, Big Sisters of Central Ohio and Columbus City Schools. Nationwide Foundation is the lead sponsor. It surpassed its goal of matching 1,000 volunteer mentors with Columbus City School students its first year in 2007. What, tell us about why mentoring, the one-on-one thing, is so important.
Right. So as you've heard already this morning, having that caring adult role model, having that relationship, somebody that that child can spend time with and look up to, is really critical to helping them get to where they want to be and where we want them to be. And so Project Mentor is a great mechanism to help make that happen. So we've partnered with Columbus City Schools and have some generous support from Nationwide and AEP, and we have about 85 partners, volunteer partners in the community, including Nationwide, AEP, Cardinal Health, a lot of variety of businesses, organizations that are providing mentors who are going to the schools 1 hour once a week to help mentor a child, and they're each paired one-on-one. And so that child and that mentor meet together, and we have activities that they participate in to help foster the relationship, but also to help focus in on some of those key academic principles, talk about attendance, talk about their future, talk about the things that are preventing them from getting to their goals. And that's what the mentoring relationship is all about, is having that one person who can really spend time with that child and be their champion and be their cheerleader and their advocate.
There's been research that kids, mentors, and kids aren't necessarily, that kids really listen, and I didn't need research to know this, that they really listen to their peers mm-hmm. more than anything. And I was wondering to what extent peer mentoring occurs in the program or is looked at and considered.
Mm-hmm. We do have some peer mentoring programs within the Big Brothers Big Sisters model, not necessarily through this particular program, but we certainly see the value of having the peer mentoring. And as Maureen mentioned, through the program that they work on, they have the peer mentoring model.
Right.
And that is a very powerful thing because they're closer in age. They've been through it at a time that's a little closer to when that child or that student is going through it. So it definitely has a lot of power to help guide that child as well, which is really a great thing.
We have an email from Ashley. She writes, my husband dropped out of high school in ninth grade, and to be honest, I'm surprised he made it that far in school. He has a learning disability and struggled constantly in school. He currently reads at around a third grade level at 28 years old. I just feel like he didn't get the attention he needed to help with his learning disability, both in school and at home. After high school, he was incarcerated for 4 years. I am not in any way taking the blame off of him because he chose his actions that sent him to prison and deserved every second. But I just wanted to note the connection that he falls into the categories that you are discussing with a low-income family, a learning disability, no role model at all, and lack of additional help from home school. You know, learning disabilities are very, very tricky. They're very expensive to address. A lot of, particularly with reading disabilities and that sort of thing, it takes a lot of specialized attention. Nancy, how can we afford to do that?
It does take a lot of specialized attention, and it does take a lot of resources. And also with learning disabilities, oftentimes young people don't get diagnosed
right.
until they are embedded in certain behavior patterns and certain expectations from the adults in their lives that really don't do them any favors. So it is expensive, and not just dealing with learning disabilities, but also it's very expensive to look at how we create these child-focused communities, if you will. There are expenses related to that. We talked earlier about efficiencies and so forth. You can become very efficient and meet no one's needs. So what we have to do is look at where are the resources going? How are we deploying resources to meet learning disabilities? How are we deploying resources to create relationship-focused education and social communities for our young people? And how do we look at resource generation and resource appropriation in a way that goes beyond the fairly strict black and white, this dollar in, this dollar out approach? Because a lot of the results that we need to see, we're not going to see for another 5, 10, 15 years, 20 years even, for young people who are currently at risk or going to become at risk.
Maureen Casamassimo, when you're talking about a learning disability, when you're talking about a 28-year-old man who never got the education he needed to overcome the learning disability, reads at a third grade level, how do you address those kinds of things in the system that you're working in now? When you flag one of those kids, what do you do?
Well, it's
because a lot of that stuff, I don't mean to interrupt you, but a lot of that stuff starts very young.
Absolutely.
In the educational process.
Absolutely.
Not in the ninth grade.
Absolutely. And one of the things we see that actually makes it a little bit of a challenge for the schools is that we have a lot of mobility with our students, so that sometimes their records don't follow them when they are moving from school district to school district and even building to building within a district. So there isn't a paper trail, if you will, of to identify that a student has been identified early on. Mm-hmm. And so part of what we do is if we see something that isn't quite right, we do look at school records. We do try to link them with other support services within the building that have more of a expertise, if you will, on identifying what those challenges might be that the student has not been identified with before. So it is, we do like a conduit, if you will, within the school building itself, because we aren't teachers, we are counselors, and we have to get those students to the proper intervention specialist.
The building on that, it oftentimes the dropout now, that originated back even in early childhood, the seeds that led to the dropping out. And it's really important that we, in our policies, in our governance, in our school systems, in our communities, that we look at connections, better connections between that early childhood time frame and moving into school. And we talk about the lost records that occur within and across school districts. Oh my gosh, yes. But also, how do we look at data from early childhood before kids even enter into kindergarten? Mm-hmm. So, you know, United Way, one of our stellar programs is Columbus Kids, which focuses on helping to assess, identify young people before they even start into kindergarten, so that as they move into kindergarten, their parents are aware of where they have strengths and weaknesses, what are the issues that need addressed, where are they strong, and move that information into the school system so that the teachers understand. And we need to create that sort of data alignment and personal alignment across all of the transition points and from system to system. That's a huge issue, but it's really, really important because dropouts typically don't happen overnight.
John in Marysville, you're on the air. We're running out of time, but I wanted to see what you had to say, John. Welcome to the show.
Okay, and this show brings so many things to my mind, but I'm going to try to focus here. You know, I'm a patriotic American, and I don't wear a flag decal on my car. But what I do is I want to step up and make this country better. I'm a substitute teacher. I go prefer to go to Columbus rather than Marysville because that's where the need is. I want to be that positive role model that your callers have been referring to. I also want to state that I'm a foster parent. We've taken on a foster son. He's a junior in Marysville. He's taking honors classes. So what I'm asking everybody to do, if you love this country, this is where the need is, and step up to the plate and do your best to make this country a better place to live.
That's a beautiful thought. Thank you, John. Thanks a lot for your call, John, and thanks for listening. I want to say thanks to my guests as well, Jennifer Voigt, Vice President of Programs for Big Brothers Big Sisters of Central Ohio. Jennifer, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Nancy Nestor Baker, OSU Administrator on loan to United Way of Central Ohio. Nancy, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks so much.
And also Maureen Casa Massimo, I hope I haven't butchered your name today, Center Supervisor for the AT&T Success Center at Linda McKinley High School. Thank you. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.